Hey everybody, as sure as the sun rises and sets, my computer will have a problem in the middle of an episode and will have to use my lower quality Zoom audio that still sounds fine, but isn't as good as this microphone. Just have a contingency plan. This happens enough, why don't you have like a solution ready? I'm not gonna fucking do that. I'm not gonna fucking do that. Here's Inferno.
Fuck, I can't believe I used my good joke about how many apps Connor has before we clap to sync.
I believed in you then, and now I'm like, I don't know.
You started spinning the siren on Connor that he has to bring his A game, and what did you do? You let it trickle on down like you're Tom Hanks getting out of a pool.
Cause he's always getting out of pools, man. He's always in a fucking Italian pool, just like getting out.
This is the wettest Hanks we've seen so
far. I think so. Yeah.
He's soaking wet Hanks.
Well, he does swim in the last one, so that was like pretty wet.
Yeah, but he swims a bunch at the end of this one, and he starts it in the hospital just sweaty as fuck.
So much in this. He fight swims.
He's really sweaty in the hospital. I think Tom Hanks has some amazing hospital scenes. And this truly was like, wow, this is an actor phoning it in live for a paycheck. I was loving it.
Are you kidding me? All that sweat and you're going to call him a phony actor? You can't sweat on cue if you're not in it.
This was definitely the least dialed in Hanks has ever been. And I think when it's most apparent is whenever he's asked to make a noise like he's in pain. It always sounds like a fly landed on him.
Mild annoyance and confusion. That is the tone of how he spends most of this movie, is that he's just really confused. He just doesn't know what's going on.
It's also the freaking tone of me watching the movie. Hi, welcome to fucking Got Him. Welcome Dead Horse, the podcast where we own Tom Hanks. It's a podcast about under-discussed film franchises, the underseen, the overextended, and we're talking about the finale of the Robert Langdon film trilogy, Inferno.
Whoa. Are we not counting the Peacock original series?
We are not.
No.
I mean, maybe you're not doing an episode, but it's a continuation of the Robert Langdon story.
Okay, the third of the 3.5 parts of the filmed Robert Langdon saga.
I just think it's important we remember Peacock.
I didn't know that it existed, and that like makes my whole life different. Like, I have a lot to do now.
It's gone like one, because everybody who I mentioned this movie to didn't know it existed until I reminded them, and no one, not a fucking soul, knows about the Peacock series. What is it called, Connor?
Oh, it's The Lost Symbol, because I think it's important to discuss that I was originally booked on this episode because I have hot takes about the book The Lost Symbol, and we just assumed that they adapted the third book into the third movie. But no, this is the fourth book in the Robert Langdon journey.
What?
They skip The Lost Symbol, and then they make it into the Peacock series.
Somebody just let that man teach at Cambridge and leave him alone with these crazy stories. Like,
he's always just hanging out. I think it's at Harvard, and then somebody walks up to him and is like, you want to fucking have the worst time of your life? You'll get to swim in a bunch of pools, but it's going to suck.
Now, I haven't read or seen the other ones in a while. I have read and seen them all. This feels like this is the least, like, why did they pick him? Everybody knows about Dante. He didn't feel like that necessary for the plot of this movie.
I don't know why they keep bringing the same guy in for, you're right, they're like fairly mined fields of study, because it's like, we need somebody who knows about Leonardo da Vinci. And then the second one's like, we need a guy who knows about Pope stuff.
Speaking of why they bring that guy in, today's guest is Connor Scully. We're so
Speaking
happy
of
to
Pope
have
stuff.
Pope expert.
Catholicism enthusiast. I'm sorry, Dixon.
No, I was just apologizing for drinking out of this on the street.
Hey, listener, oh, I like Dixon's it. Got the big water. It says, build life.
Oh, shit.
7 a.m., good morning.
Shut 9 up.
You've got it. 11 a.m., remember your goal. 1 p.m., that's it. 3 p.m., keep drinking. 5 p.m., no excuses. 7 p.m., a little bit more. 9 p.m., well done.
Can I go next? 8 a.m., drink up. 9 a.m., keep going. 10 a.m., halfway there. 11 a.m., you got this. 12 p.m., yay! And then you stop drinking water forever. Don't drink anymore.
All right, Connor, you want to share what yours says?
Oh, actually, yeah, wait, this is good. So I've got this big Thrasher's cup, and it's a spud, and he's holding, it's like a living spud, and he's holding a hose. But I was actually curious, because, like, I don't know if your listeners know, but Dixon is afraid of, like, the little stuff that grows out of the potato when it's, like, been sitting around for too long. I believe that's what his hair is made of. Does that bother you?
Don't show that to him. Turn your camera. You don't like off. That? Take it off the camera.
It's not real.
Does that bother it can't you?
Imagine Dixon, like, downloading the movie Nope on his phone and pulling up
yeah,
all
I know,
of the
right?
scary
I was
chimp
just gonna
scenes
say.
And being like, hey, Connor, does this fuck with you?
Man, too many movies with monkeys in them. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I've come on this podcast That's to talk
you're,
about.
You're literally dodging them.
I've got two interests. The Dan Brown series of novels and films and eradicating monkeys from filmed media.
You're the Ted Turner of monkeys in movies. Digitally removing all of them.
I just don't know why the Fablemans needs a monkey. This seems like a plot line that's just meant to keep me out of the theater.
More and more directors are doing this nowadays, trying to keep Connor Scully out of the theater.
It's a huge plot point for, like, just where theater's going in 2023.
Wait, hang on, let me contextualize you a little bit. So, you're a good friend of all of ours, and also mm-hmm. he is a director and theater producer in the great, in the city that never sleeps. Yes, Connor Scully is here. I just wanted everybody to know who you were. So
what
just
are you
like,
about?
Our guy, Connor here, is here.
Well, everybody at this point, I assume all your listeners have watched the new Freeform reality series, The Come Up. So they're very familiar now yeah. with my job, The Tank.
Wait, are you in The
heavily
Come Up?
Featured in, no, just The Tank is heavily featured in The Come Up, Freeform's new reality show about dime square culture. Everyone's going to be watching it. It's going to be a thriller. All your listeners, they're Come Up heads at this point.
By the time this comes out.
Well, you know everybody's catching up on their Freeform.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry you had to delete the Freeform app off of your phone to be able to record this voice memo. How will you be able to watch old episodes of Greek?
I watched episodes of Greek when it was on TV.
I knew you did.
I forgot about that show. Wow. I wasn't like a Greek head, but I had seen some episodes.
Were you a Kyle XY head? Were you just thirsting for belly button free twinks?
I was going to say was not a Kyle XY head, but was very invested in the belly button thing on the billboards.
I was a real Kyle XY billboard head, specifically.
Yeah. Well, I'd say I'm overall just a billboard head.
I missed you.
It's good to be here talking about an incredible film that was full of thrills, actions. It made sense. I followed the plot 100% the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I found both the actors to be charismatic, enthralling people.
I think you misspoke, but I think it was apt. Describing this as a film full of actions is really appropriate, I think.
They do go from place to place.
Yeah. Nothing like the last one. The last one, they really go place to place.
Is the last one Angels and Demons? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's because they do, that's the first book. They just do this whole series wrong.
And that's why in the movies, there's zero reference to all of his previous, like, Herculean, heroic, like, earth-saving, you know, moments in his life. Like, there's just no, they're all pretty much standalone movies, which makes the whole thing all that much more camp and, like, ridiculous that there's, like, no layering of any of that. That being said, this is my favorite of all of them.
Oh no.
100%. This is my favorite.
I am very sad to say that I do agree. Of the three of these films, I think this was the best.
100%.
It's not good.
No. No.
I can't imagine ever watching this film a second time.
I might.
I had to.
PJ, you've seen this before?
Oh, no, I hadn't seen it before. I just couldn't pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, yeah.
This has happened to me a couple times on recording this show where, like, I watch it once and cannot keep my phone down because it's boring. It is boring. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of, like, half watch it during work when I'm processing people's criminal history check background reports and stuff like that. I'm not really paying attention to that stuff, so if you're applying to the nonprofit that I work for, just don't do crimes and we'll just be chill. No, I had to watch this more than once to try to get any of it to stick at all, because it's a Ron Howard, Robert Langdon movie. But I also did think that this movie just had a lot more ingredients that give it a baseline, like, more tension and momentum than the last one. Part of that is that I think Ron Howard got kind of close to, like, leveling up his filmmaking. The filmmaking aesthetic of this movie feels very different from the last two. And, like, every once in a while, Ron Howard will be like, well, hey now, don't count me out. I'm a stylist. Like he did when there was this movie he did. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
You gotta stop it.
And in that film, he has all of these weird canted angles and wide angle lenses on close-ups. And the whole movie has like a layer of Vaseline over the lens. And in this movie, Ron Howard said, you know what? I'm Tony Scott, bitch. You know, what if we really used the opening of this movie to say, hey, all right, I know you came for a thriller, but yeah, I'm Ron Howard and I'm gonna motherfuck you. You know, this movie has this, like, the opening of it, which opens with Robert Langdon is in a hospital bed and he is disoriented. He doesn't remember the last 48 hours. And it really tries to catch you up to the manic disorientation of waking up suddenly in the middle of a crisis and everyone is trying to kill you. And, you know, I'm sure it was really great for the target audience of them that, you know, this movie opens and the hero is, like them, a confused, disoriented, wet old man.
Well, the actual beginning, and we should do a summary. I can try. The beginning of the movie actually opens with a new character we've never met, and it's like he's like running from people who are chasing him, and then he ends up like jumping off a building and committing suicide rather than like succumbing to them. And so it was really like, it was the best opening of any of these movies, I think. I think Da Vinci Code tries to do that, but it just like didn't work. Like, it was just like much more boring, even though it was like a very intricate like Vitruvian man death. And it's still more boring. I was, as ridiculous as this movie is, it was so much more interesting to watch. There was just so much more going on, and a lot of risky and maybe not great choices, but like they were so much more fun to watch than like the safeness of the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, I feel like. Because I feel like it's from a different... It feels like it's not the same franchise, like how silly it was.
Dixon is frozen.
Okay.
Yeah, he texted us and he said that his computer decided to turn off for no reason, and that's really fun. But I was trying to figure out if Becky was trying to stall for his return or if I should say something.
I was internalizing his expression going, maybe this is bad what I'm saying.
No, he was frozen.
This happened to me before.
Yeah.
Hey.
So what were you saying?
Becky was talking about how different this movie is from the other ones, and that it feels like it's from, tell me if this feels like an accurate representation of what you were saying, that it either feels like it's from a different franchise or like it's a whole different director.
Both.
From someone who didn't see the last ones recently, I knew the last two were Ron Howard. I completely forgot this was Ron Howard until his name appeared on screen. I thought it was going to be like James Mangold or some shit, like just like some generic asshole action director, like and it's, yeah, it I don't know, it doesn't feel like a, I mean, what does a Ron Howard movie feel like? He's a very blasé director, I think, so yeah. He exists.
It feels like somebody walked up to the camera and said, I know how to turn this on. But yeah, this, there's like a ton of like handheld shots in it and shit. Like it's very kind of shaky. It's going for like kind of a Bourne aesthetic in a lot of the quote unquote action shots. And there's a lot of, like you were saying, PJ, this sort of like flashy Tony Scott editing where like there's all of a sudden these weird French New Wave. Yeah, the film Inferno is really indebted to the French New Wave, R.I.P. Godard. But like there are lots of like jump cuts and like obvious filters being placed on shit, like very shaky visions that are like actually trying to achieve the look of the Botticelli Dante painting as opposed to filmed PowerPoints about him that Ian McKellen is pointing at and being like, that's a woman.
Okay, so the clips from Dante's like Inferno that like Robert Langdon is like sort of like reliving in this weird way, they're like very cool. Like they're like very silly, but they're like kind of cool. Like it's a vibe. It might not be mine, but I like, it was something. Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. It was like such a risk, you know, and I appreciated all of that. Quite silly though. Like people, like he's just looking at all of the world and like people like look really like scary and their heads are turned around while they're like walking away. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool. I mean,
there are like legs sticking up out of the ground to echo the Botticelli painting.
That was a big one. The leg with the R, they're like, do not forget this leg. That's important. That comes in later.
Top leg.
So Becky, you said you could try a summary.
I can try. Unless Connor, you watched it today. Are you feeling confident?
Oh, I feel absolutely confident that after watching this film, I could not give you a summary.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
I mean, I can tell you some stuff, and I did read the first 250 pages of the book, but also the end of the book, because the end is different.
I'm gonna pull up the IMDb, because I want to like look at the cast names to discern them a bit. Okay.
We open
this Tom fella.
Tom Hanks. We open with billionaire running away from unknown people chasing him. He jumps off the like some fucking place in like Rome. I don't know. They're always in Italy.
It was CGI, right? It was a CGI tower.
No, that's maybe. Ben Foster died.
It was just like, why not just use a tower?
I didn't notice that, but I hope you're right, because that's so funny. So that happens. We wake up with Robert Langdon then in the hospital, completely disoriented. He can't see straight. He's so sick. Fuck, everything's so sick. He wakes up to a gorgeous doctor. Fuck, look at her. And she has a bullet grazed his head, so he's like suffering head trauma. And like the second he wakes up, there's an assassin trying to kill him. So he and the doctor run, and the doctor is Felicity Jones. He and the doctor run to her apartment. Of course, all doctors take patients to their apartments. They escape narrowly. They keep escaping from lots of different players, okay? There's a nefarious character after them. There's an Italian policewoman who's, like, straight up shooting him, like, in broad daylight. There is the World Health Organization that's after him. Come to find, he can't remember anything that happened to him the past 48 hours. Come to find that he has this like pointer made of human bone that when projected, it like projects light, and it's Dante's Inferno. Sorry, I forgot to mention that, like, he's like suffering this head trauma and he like keeps having these insane visions to like a hell like existence where like blood is like completely flooding, filling the streets, and there's like people with their heads turned around and crazy shit like that. Like, majorly did, like, not really scholarly vibes. It was crazy. Very different from the last movies. So then they're running everywhere, trying to find all the clues, trying to figure out what's up with the thing. They find out that, like, that image was doctored, and they're trying to find... No, I think I got it. Okay, so come to find out through various things that crazy billionaire, he created a virus because he believes he loves the world and he wants to save it, and overpopulation is taking over. So he's created a virus that will kill like 50% of people if they release it. So it's bound to be released. So him and this doctor are like trying to stop it, and like all these like people are trying to like stop him, but he doesn't know who to trust, so he's running away from everybody. Come to find out, his BFF, his absolute best friend on this earth, the emergency room doctor, Felicity Jones, actually is not there to help him. And she was in love with the billionaire. And so she actually, once she figures out where the virus is, stops Tom from getting out of, like, this, like, crawl space, and she goes to like ensure that the virus is spread because she's like totally brainwashed and stuff. And then they go to Istanbul and they stop her from exposing the virus. And he is in love with the World Health Organization itself. And he acts like we knew that from other movies. Am I crazy? Was that in other movies, him and Elizabeth?
No.
That was so weird. Okay, so in the World Health Organization's, like, leader is this, like, Lady Elizabeth, and, like, they act like in the Da Vinci Code she was, like, his long-lost lover of the entire franchise, like a will-they-won't-they for, like, three films. But they introduced her in this film, and they're both like, ah, you're just the same. I'm like, we don't have this nostalgia with you guys. He's been with 7 other academic brunettes this whole time. Like, what makes you so special? I thought that was such a weird move. Anyway, that's pretty much what happens, unless y'all remember something important I forgot.
There's the time where he steals the mask and then he returns the mask at the end of the movie.
Faultless.
Sneaky.
That's pretty goofy. When he's like, ooh, it's right in there the whole time. That's the most Tom Hanks he gets to be the whole movie.
I don't really understand, like, why he stole the mask and where the fuck Ignacio went.
So, yeah, that is one thing. So, Ignacio is a character who features in early Tom Hanks visions and was his friend who helped steal literally Dante's death mask from a museum. He just says bye. He just sticks it in his coat and just leaves the film. Puts it somewhere. They find it. And it's goodbye, Ignacio.
Where is he? We never even met him. We only saw him on the security cams.
they steal... Well, it's got to be one of the top... At least 1,000, like, Western relics. Like, Dante Alighieri's death mask. That's got to be, like, cracking the top 1,000 by walking
Could
up
you
to the...
Give me your... Could you give me your tiers of Western relics? What are some S-tier Western relics?
Number one, Statue of Liberty.
Okay.
Number two.
Wow, that's the top dog, the Statue of Liberty.
The subway system.
Got Robert Langdon on film stealing the subway system. Taking it all into his friend's coat after he walks up to a glass case.
And he returns it with a smirk, a smug-ass smirk.
You should tell her the lights in the subway system are off. No, we're very sorry. The subway was stolen.
These Italians, man, they keep being in these movies.
Nah, Union should have made a rule about that years ago, that if you're in SAG, you should not have to make contact, face-to-face contact with an Italian. You should not risk contact with the frying medium secreted from their horrible pores. You let me pick my anti-Italianism scab and I bled all over
you. I know. Okay, so to neutralize that, I love the Italian policewoman. I think she's great.
The one who was shooting at Robert Langdon?
Yeah, she's got a good face and she's walking with so much purpose. And I was scared of her, and I also was like, hey, you know what I mean?
Extremely hot, and then they drop her through a ceiling.
If I learned one thing from acting school, it's that walking with purpose is the top thing about being an actor. That's how you know someone's really good.
You might get noticed on a podcast about 60 people listen to if you walk with a purpose.
Hey, we've been doing well lately. It's about 95 these
days. Yeah, baby, yeah.
Oh, I'll get ready for the Scully bump.
All the Scully heads coming in.
Everyone who's got a crush on that lady swinging in for this episode, and this is where we blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's a big fan of that actor who's been surveying Twitter to figure out what is a socially appropriate way to talk about being aroused by someone. They're going on to Letterboxd and they're going, I wish that she would drop me through the ceiling of a museum. Is this anything? I'm sorry.
This is just what you're doing tomorrow.
This is what I did 10 minutes before I got on this record.
Yeah, she's great. And also, Irfan Khan. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. He's amazing.
You're fun, Khan.
He's so good in everything. He made this movie, so much better than... You don't think he's good in everything? I don't know. Everything I've seen him in, I think he's great in.
I was shaking my head at PJ's pun.
Irfan Khan is bad. It was dog shit. You shouldn't have even indulged me with a smile at that. Irfan Khan is a fucking pro.
Everything he does, I'm just I want more of him. I want a whole... I guess Life of Pi is his movie, right?
I don't know what I've seen him in. He had a very familiar face. I'm sure I've seen him in something, but I didn't look up his filmography because I finished the movie 50 minutes before we started recording and I had to find some reviews, which, by the way, there's some doozies in this batch.
He's a Bollywood star. He's been in a zillion.
He's in Life of Pi. He started popping in the States and in I don't know if he'd been in British movies before then. I don't want to talk out of my asshole, but Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
Where he's the one interrogating Dev Patel is, I think, the moment where people started being can we make our shitty American blockbusters seem more credible with this guy? And the answer was yes.
He's just so good. In this dumb movie, he just makes it so
he's
good.
He's selling it. Yeah.
Well, that's also part of why I like this movie more than the other ones is because there's no character like him in.
Yeah.
There's no one who just kind of lives in a, I'm kind of a shitty guy area. Everybody is always, is either they're trying to blow up the Pope or I'm going to blow up the Pope. There's no, and those are, you either want to blow up the Pope or don't. There's no, it'd be all right if the Pope blew up.
It's just Catholic or you hate Catholic.
And on Dead Horse, I want to make clear, very pro-Catholic.
That's why we have Connor. Connor, I want to toss it over to my boy Connor. Connor, are you open to talking about your background with Catholicism? How you feel about the movie and Catholicism? And also, you were Catholic, right?
Yeah. I went to Catholic school.
I know that for a fact. I was just acting it was a question.
Is this movie that Catholic?
This one isn't, but I would call it a Catholic franchise. Absolutely.
I would too, Christ. But that's why it's just really odd that Robert Langdon's brought in for this job.
Yeah.
That I thought it was going to be he stumbled his way into this and they're like, oh no, we came and got him because he knows so much about Dante.
That's not
now just he's just like he knows all Italian things.
Yeah.
He's just the Italian expert.
You expect
I'm confused.
To talk to an Italian about it? That could be dangerous. Yeah.
Is this man just the specialist in everything? Just he's also the Dante specialist. Oh, he's also this specialist.
What he does when they find him, the character of Ignazio is Robert Langdon explicitly is there's no one who knows Dante better than him. So they get him for this job and then he's like, oh, I'll bring a guy who knows more about this stuff on board. Like, what the fuck are you doing? He was around when the Pope almost blew up.
If there's just an Italian emergency that has to do with, like, Italy, then he's involved. And I don't know why.
That's my favorite book in the Robert Langdon series is The Italian Emergency.
Italian Fortress. Connor, what do you think of, like, what's your overall feelings about the movie? Like, what was your experience watching it?
I have, like, mildly fond memories of Angels and Demons, so I'm, like, a little surprised that you all like this one more, because I thought this was really bad. And I have really hot takes mostly on Felicity Jones.
Oh, I would love to hear, for sure.
Let's go.
Okay. If you had asked me this morning when I woke up before I watched Inferno what I thought about Felicity Jones, I would have been like, oh, yeah, she's really good. I think that she's, like, a really good actress. Why did I think that? I could not tell you, except that she's British. She's been in, like, one movie I like, but I was like, she's really good. She is maybe the most uncharismatic person I've ever seen on screen. I felt like every time I saw her face, I was like, why am I watching this movie? You are just not keeping my attention at all. There's nothing interesting about you. And I'm now, like, the biggest anti-Felicity Jones person. I looked at her Wikipedia. I got about why I ever thought she was great. I think I'm very anti-Felicity Jones. Her character's also bizarre. So it's not just her fault.
I like her.
Her character's just like... I don't like Rogue One either, so I think that's part of
it. Me neither.
Rogue One, but I think she's pretty good in it. But I, like... You know, there's only so much she can do. That was my take.
I thought she was good in that too.
She's great. I think she's good in Like Crazy. With what's his name? Who died? Sorry,
the Queen.
I need to. With Anton Yelchin.
Oh, gotcha.
I like her in The Theory of Everything. She's good in that. I'm not saying she's always bad, but I did not enjoy it.
That's totally fair.
I did not enjoy her in this.
I feel the same way about it as I do Tom Hanks. I would never be, like, anti-Tom Hanks because of this franchise. You know what I mean? Like, it teased people up for, like, a weird experience. And that's interesting that you felt that way. I totally vibe with that because it wasn't particularly engaging. However, I didn't think it was bad acting. It might have been boring, but I did buy what she was doing. Like, I bought it.
I didn't find it necessarily bad. I just found it absolutely unengaging.
Sure.
Absolutely uncharismatic. Yeah. Just like, it felt like nothing grabbed my attention. But I also think she had a bad character that, like, she was just kind of like a woman who is also a doctor who exists. And like...
But that's what they all are. That's what every single brunette is in this.
So they don't talk about in the movie, I don't think, her child acting career, do they?
No.
What?
No, I'm okay. Fascinated. It was
so in the book, he goes with her back to her apartment and discovers who she really was by finding, like, a pile of papers about her. And it turns out that she was a child theater prodigy, is the quote. And why was she a prodigy? Because she learned all her lines in one night and gave people their cues.
Not everybody can do it, honey. She's carrying the industry on her back.
At one point, Robert sees her IQ, and it's 176, and he is shocked that a woman could have an IQ so high. That's something that's really left out of this book, is that Robert is like, what? This is a smart woman, and I cannot believe that this is a smart woman, is like what happens over and over again in the book.
They should have left that in the movie so that Tom Hanks had another opportunity to make a noise, like he saw his dog put something in its mouth that he shouldn't have.
Oh, poor Felicity Jones. Is it Jones? It's not Huffman? That's a different Felicity?
Yeah, it's Jones. Okay.
That's a different.
Deeply different.
They're all Felicities. I feel like, number one, it's very funny that in the book, her backstory is that she got, like, radicalized by giving a, like, revelatory Cappy-winning performance in whatever Urinetown. Poor Felicity Jones.
She was giving everybody her cues for urine down. And that was what made her want to kill half the population, was being in theater.
I bet that introduced her to that billionaire guy. I bet they were fucking like Kinnicky and Rizzo in a production. And he was just like, I have plans to save humanity from itself. And she was just like, a hickey from Kinnicky. Connor, what's your point?
No, it's just she in the book does not turn evil.
What?
The book ends with... Okay, so it's a totally different ending where the virus gets out. They don't stop it. But the virus doesn't kill people. It makes a third of the population infertile. And they're just like, it got out. And that's like the end of the book. And they're like, well, nothing we can do about it. It got out. Guess we just have to let it serve its course. And Ron Howard's like, no, we can't do that. But it's all about,
that's
and like she
so
mentions,
interesting.
She mentions early in, because I wrote this down without even knowing this is the ending. She mentions like very early in, she's described as she's haunted by her inability to give a child. So it all comes full circle with this, this infertilization.
You guys can't either.
I really like this idea that you can make a virus that like perfectly attacks one third of the population.
Or a half.
Like, all right, this is all you're gonna do, buddy. You're gonna do a lot, but then you're gonna stop.
A virus created by Thanos.
How did you guys feel about her storyline and like the twist?
I kind of liked it.
I liked it too. I didn't see it coming at all.
No, me neither. I mean, that's really the reason I liked it, is because I was like, oh, raunchy Ron, horny Howard, you got me, you slippery
totally
little,
got me.
You little devil.
It did. I mean, it did get me, but I'm not sure. But I felt like I'm not sure how much of that was like, oh wow, this has been so expertly laid out, and
no,
how much of that was just like, okay, like, yeah, you can just do that, I guess. That's new.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, there were no breadcrumbs. Everybody should have been got, you know, but, like, it was just like, okay. And then I just, like, sat forward, and I mean, it didn't necessarily make it better, but I was, like, interested, you know? It just made me interested to, like, see what was going on.
Tom Hanks reacted to her betrayal like he got to the grocery store and couldn't remember if he needed parsnips or turnips. Oh, no, no. Oh. No, don't. Oh.
He really was so like.
Well, that's another thing I want to ask Connor, is because I feel like it's maybe safe to say that Connor, you're perhaps the biggest Hanks head of the four of us.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know if you remember this, but first day of freshman year acting class, Thomas Cunningham's Christ. Acting class, he asked us who we thought the greatest actor was. And I said, Tom Hanks. And he got upset about it. He was not happy. But here's the thing. I don't know if I agree with that anymore, but I still love Tom Hanks.
Hell yeah.
And I think he's so great. And I think he is chilling in this film.
Mm-hmm.
He is hanging out with his buddy Ron. He's traveling. He's probably working on, you know, his next Spielberg character in the evenings, putting in more work on other movies.
Yeah.
But he's having a good time, I think.
I can't tell if he's having a good time. I don't really mind, though. Like.
So he used to only play, like, comedy characters. That was, like, his thing, because he said that he likes it because it's fun. That's what he wants to do. And then he kind of became a dad, and he started to play more, like, dad role. I guess serious roles came first, sort of. But they're still fun, serious, and then dad roles. Do you think he really loves playing like a detective? Like, is that his dad influence? Or do you think he's contractually obligated to keep making Robert Langdon movies?
I think I'm not getting passion vibes. So like for me, it feels like something he has to keep doing. Maybe he enjoys the process, but I would agree. There's nothing that he's bringing to this that I'm like, only Tom Hanks could do this, you know?
Yeah.
So
I was reading someone, because I was reading through reviews of this, because I needed to parrot smart things that other people have said. No, I mean, I was trying to read more about this. I should mention, side note, The way I found out about the twist with Felicity Jones was I was reading through the Wikipedia summary being like, how much more of this fucking thing is there? And I read that and I was like, that's gonna be crazy. I was reading, Tom Hanks was doing press for Elvis recently and the Robert Langdon movies came up and he lovingly disowned this movie. Can I pull up this article? Can I read some of this?
Oh, I want to know what he said.
Samantha Burgesson reported on this. He says, God, that was a commercial enterprise, Hank said. Yeah, those Robert Langdon sequels are hooey. The Da Vinci Code was hooey. I mean, Dan Brown, God bless him, says, here's a sculpture in a place in Paris. No, it's way over there. Those are delightful scavenger hunts that are about as accurate to history as James Bond movies are to espionage. All we were doing is promising a diversion. There's nothing wrong with good commerce, provided that it's good commerce. By the time we made the third one, we proved that it wasn't such good commerce. Let me tell you something else about Da Vinci Code. It was my 40-somethingth birthday. We were shooting in the Louvre at night. I changed my pants in front of the Mona Lisa. They brought me a birthday cake in the Grand Salon. Who gets to have that experience? Any cynicism there? Hell no.
I love that he was like, the biggest thing I remember, just like changing my pants and then bringing me a cake. I love the movies.
Very dad of him, I think, too.
I like that. And also that attitude is pretty clear in the performance, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big time. Oh, that's so illuminating to know. I just wanted to know what's up with him. Like, what is his vibe? Because he could have been grieving a whole person and I would have no idea. Like, as a, just like an actor, like going through it and then doing a job separately, like I have no clue, but I'm glad he had a good time.
Sounds like he did. Like I read halfway through production, he hopped on a private jet to go to New York and back to be one of David Letterman's last guests.
Oh,
so wow. I mean, no disrespect to Ron Howard, director of a film called How the Grinch Stole Christmas. No disrespect to him. I don't know that this movie was, like, the first thing on everyone's minds. I feel like there are these qualities to Hanks that make him so, so invaluable. And the thing that has made him, like, America's dad is that he has this, like, innate, like, warmth and decency and without seeming like sanctimonious about it, he can just be like a guy with a job and you believe that he has just some amount of like moral credibility.
Yeah.
And I just don't think there's a whole lot to Robert Langdon. I had to remember what his fucking name is. I just don't think there's a lot about him that really commands that or like calls on that skill set. I think there are moments where I'm reminded that he's appealing and I definitely like being him under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure and having to do his awkward Tom Hanks run somewhere more than I do him kind of like puttering around bemused in the Da Vinci Code.
Mm-hmm.
There is more compelling stuff for him to do here. Have y'all heard this thing about how he runs weird? Connor, I bet you've heard about this.
He runs? No, I don't know anything about it. Well, I've seen Forrest Gump.
Yes.
I feel like Dixon said something about that last time, but I don't know that I noticed particularly.
I think it was you, Becky.
Did I?
Yeah, when I was editing the episode today, I feel like, Becky, I feel like you said something about it. I want to talk about how he runs.
Maybe I noticed last time, but I forgot, at least this go around.
All right, dead horse heads, write in. Let us know who said it first. Tom Hanks, funny runner.
I feel like he did less running in this, though, than the last one. The last one, he's, like, running, like, 80%.
Oh, wait a second. I found it. So Tom Hanks congenitally runs weird. In the movie Forrest Gump, they had to have a running double.
What?
And, well, just because they're going to have scenes in, like, a wide that they might not be able to get Tom Hanks for. But he runs in a weird way that they couldn't get a stunt person to do, So they got his brother Jim Hanks, who does the voice of Woody in straight to DVD stuff.
And the Kingdom Hearts series. I am a huge Jim Hanks fan.
There you go.
Wow, I love this. Just, do you think you could Jim on the pod?
Yeah.
We could, I bet we could.
We could pull Jim. We have 92 viewers. I mean, listeners.
We have 92 viewers. Jim is extremely old. Jim is on the verge of death. Connor, I mentioned this is something I for sure said on the first episode, but I figured you'd think it was interesting. The original choice for the casting of Robert Langdon was Bill Paxton. Do you have a dream Langdon, Connor?
Everybody has a dream Langdon.
Wow, I hadn't really... Okay, he's so boring in this book.
But you've spent more time in his... Well, are the books narrated by Robert Langdon, or is it omniscient?
Oh, yeah. Here's what you have to know, that he, like, explains everything to the reader, and then there's dialogue where he explains it to a character.
Oh, that's awful.
It's, like, it's truly grueling to get through. And he'll be like, oh, like, do you know, like, Dante is, like, a major Italian poet? And you're like, okay, how, like, you are writing intelligent literature, like, he thinks, but also he needs to explain to us, he's like, that Dante's Italian.
I can't believe this woman doctor already knew that Dante was Italian.
She's this some movie... sort of child acting prodigy. Sorry, go ahead.
This movie also does so much explaining. It's awful. Like, in the third, like, the last third of the movie, they go through everything, and, like, you've already, like, sort of like, put the pieces together as a viewer, but they go through every part of the memory, and they're like, no, but actually this happened, and you're like, I know, can we just sort of move along? It's so crazy how much they explain.
Part of why, I mean, I think that it sounds like the ending of the book is a lot better just from a point of pure, that's interesting. Like, yeah. It's very interesting that our globetrotting heroes just like, oh, whoopsie dopes. But I also think it's really in keeping with Robert Langdon as an incredibly smart, but if essentially pretty ineffectual guy. I don't know if you remember this, Connor, but in Angels and Demons, he's on the trail of, like, the killer of the four Preferiti. And every time he shows up about 5 minutes too late, like, the guy is dead. He gets one guy out who, like, mostly drowns.
And then he accidentally, like, kills one of them, like, way more brutally, but he, like, tries to unleash a chain, but then he just, like, drops him deeper into the fire, so he burns to death.
So I really like the idea of Robert Langdon as a guy who people keep calling in to help with their Italy mysteries, but then just fucks everything up.
I really want a Robert Langdon movie where he's played by Will Forte in character as MacGruber. And it essentially functions as a slasher movie where, like, different people in religious leadership keep getting killed by Will Forte as Langdon trying to help.
You'd barely have to change the noises Tom Hanks makes.
Guys, are you guys okay? Do y'all... This really stood out to me. Because one of the things that I kind of like to track with, like, the trajectory of a franchise like this is when they start and stop, when they start up again, and what eventually causes them to stall out. Like where is the moment where, like, audiences lose interest in this? Because, like, the first one comes out summer 2006, and it was the summer began with that being billed as, like, this is going to be one of the most talked about movies of the summer. And then it wasn't. The next one comes out 3 years later, 2009. They tried to make a movie of The Lost Symbol for a while. That was the next one Sony wanted. I think they were just having a really hard time adapting it, and Ron Howard didn't want to direct that one, but was down to produce it. Could have been interesting. And they waited and waited and waited until they eventually get to Inferno. 7 years after the last one, this comes out in 2016. Here's what I found out. This has a much lower budget than the other ones. It was filmed summer 2015, and it was slated to come out December of 2015. They moved it on account of a little movie called The Force Awakens. So they booted it to October 2016. And I think there could be some reasons that this movie had like a big drop off in box office. Maybe it could be that no one fucking cares about these movies. But I think it could also be, I'm going to venture a guess, I kind of feel like on October 28th, 2016, I don't know what you remember of like the climate of the world in like fall 2016, but there was like some other kind of stuff kind of going on. I kept looking for like, I was like, ooh, I bet I could sound real smart if I pulled out some sort of take about, ooh, a big world pandemic. Ooh, the World Health Organization, billionaires, overpopulate. I have nothing. I have absolutely nothing. This movie was like a piece of trash that was floating around in like the very haunted, freaked out, nauseating atmosphere of those couple of months where, I don't know. I mean, Doctor Strange made kind of a lot of money. So did Moana. So it's not like no one was going to the movies that season to get their mind off of shit. But like,
yeah,
I don't know. You're like, you're walking around the streets in fall 2016, or you're like drive. I think I was driving an Uber in Washington, D.C. around that time, just like picking up scared conversations from people in the back. And one of the things that just characterized like the trashy environment is like driving by a movie theater, not paying attention and just seeing the word Inferno. You just keep driving. So I don't know, if I had to guess, one of the reasons that no one knows that there's a fucking third one, I think it's that they kind of dumped this into the background of, maybe I'm overthinking it. I'm not trying to ascribe like gigantic significance to anything that could be tangentially related to the election of Donald J. Trump. But
I would have seen it, but I was spending all my money on Kylie lip kits, so we all make choices. Yeah.
It's interesting that it was filmed in 2015, you said?
Yeah.
This has got to be, I'm looking at Hank's filmography, 2011 to like 27, like mid 2017, got to be the worst of his career. Every other movie is just really bad.
Give me the rundown.
He is, okay, we're going Larry Crown, weird movie.
We all remember it.
What is that?
Where are my crown heads?
What is that?
It's like, it's a Julia Roberts, Tom Hanks rom-com.
What the fuck? Just another white man name?
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see it, but I remember it happened.
Cloud Atlas.
You were what, 8 years old?
Which he's like doing crazy things in.
I was in my third grade classroom when Extremely Loud.
When the teacher wheeled the TV in to show you Extremely Loud and Incredible.
That's how you know you're a millennial, when you remember that movie.
If you didn't see Tom Hanks jumping off of the World Trade Center coming at you in 3D in second grade, did you even go to school?
When the teacher put on Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, like, all these kids were getting called out of my class, but my parents made me stay and watch it.
It's crazy that that movie came out on 9/11.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So wait a second.
Really predicted a lot of stuff.
Oh my god. Fuck you for that one, Dixon. This movie asks big questions. What if a kid loved puzzles and hated loud noises? You were talking about this era of Tom Hanks's career and Cloud Atlas, the movie where he plays like
crazy,
like 18 different ethnicities or something.
Yes,
I heard that's actually like a beautiful movie. I'm not trying to be too flippant. I think it's crazy that he played 18 ethnic. Go ahead.
It's not good, but.
There's some stuff in it that's good. He apparently recently said
not the movie. Sorry, I just meant to play 18 ethnicities is not good.
Oh,
20 or nothing.
Sure. Yeah, it's a fascinating film. It's weird. He recently said on, oh my God, I'm on a podcast and I can't think of what's his name. Mark Maron. Yeah. He was on Maron and apparently said that that's like one of his three like most proud roles is Cloud Atlas. Which is like, okay, man.
His other two are Angels and Demons and Inferno.
No, it's got to be like 2016's A Hologram for the King.
Fucking excuse me?
What about 2015's Ithaca?
What are these?
2016's California Typewriter?
What?
Everybody's favorite Tom Hanks movies.
What the fuck are you saying? Are you doing like the end of Usual Suspects where you're just looking around your room and saying nouns?
These are literal movies he made. Now, he did make like Bridge of Spies, Captain Phillips, Sully, like mixed in there. But every other movie is like, what is A Hologram for the King?
What the
sounds
heck?
Pretty self-explanatory.
it's based on a Dave Eggers novel.
Oh, I'm already tired of it.
The Circle is kind of, in my mind, like the end of this era. He does The Circle and then he does The Post, Toy Story 4, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
It was based on a really popular book and was adapted into a movie that like every actor ever was in. And was reportedly like whatever.
Gotcha. Much of these movies must have been reportedly whatever. Like three of those were completely new concepts to enter my mind. Ithaca.
You don't believe Ithaca more than A Hologram for the King? That's obviously the way crazier title.
Ithaca's got a crazy cast, though. Meg Ryan, Hamish Linklater. I'm always a big fan of when a Linklater shows up in a movie.
Love a Tim Story Fantastic Four movie where my boy Hamish is showing up and he's like, Dr. Doom, do you need me to bring your car around? Or whatever he does. I'm looking at A Hologram for the King.
I just want to sit in PJ recalling a specific line from Tim Story's Fantastic Four movie.
I'm paraphrasing, okay? He says something like that.
I look it up, it's exact. It even sounds the same.
PJ, I have a question for you. I'd love to circle back to something, a point that you kind of hinted at earlier about, and I'd say you're an expert on this topic, probably.
Oh, no.
Is Ron Howard considered in your mind to be a horny director?
No.
Okay, you touched on the horniness of Ron Howard.
No. Ron Howard has the vibes of someone who, like, gets a boner once and then starts doing all the home remedies for getting sprayed by a skunk.
He covers his dick in tomato sauce and wills it away.
His wife comes in, well, you shouldn't have scared it.
No, Racy Ron is my, like, my running gag on this movie. Because it's just, like, it's so... I mean, I don't think he's, like, an awful filmmaker. I don't think he's, like, fucked up. I've just been gagging on him for, like, this whole series because, you know, he's not, like, the big dick swinging auteur over here who's, like, all right, you know it's a Ron Howard picture. You know how you know it's a Ron Howard picture? If you don't know it's a Ron Howard picture.
What's his last good movie?
It's 12 Lives.
You watched that one.
Oh, the doc?
No, it's
not.
Is
it a documentary?
It's not a documentary. It's a narrative film about the 12 boys who were, like, trapped in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super. I mean, Colin Farrell's in it. Viggo is in it. It's really good.
Me, Colin Farrell.
I will say it's real quick and dirty. Like, the way that they move in that movie is, like, helpful. Because it's a very complicated, like, plot line. So, like, the simplicity of the directing, like, really did make it. I thought it makes sense. I thought it was really good. But I will say, like, the perspective is, we should get boys out of caves, you know? Like, it was like, yeah, no, I fully agree, Ron. Yeah.
Who says Ron Howard doesn't have a worldview? Come on. Just watch, like, 12 Lives.
It was really good. I think you guys should watch it.
I would be down for that. I heard Rush with Chris Hemsworth was really, really fun. Mm. I heard that's a cool movie.
No, that's kind of my question. That's 2013. Mm-hmm. And then, like, maybe, like, Frost Nixon, Cinderella Man. It looks like he, like, can put out, like, something that people really enjoy every 5 years, and then just, like, the most bland movies to fill his time in between.
Yeah. I keep thinking about The Dilemma. Like, I never saw that movie. I don't think I'm ever going to watch The Dilemma, but it is, to me, it's like a fake on the scale of A Hologram for the King. It, like, really is a made-up movie. It's Kevin James, Vince Vaughn, and it was one of those weird studio comedies in the, like, late first decade of the 2000s or early 2010s that I feel like had a $70 million budget, despite it being like, would you tell your friend if you knew their wife was cheating on you? And it cost $80 million.
Wait, isn't that literally the tagline of the movie? Because I have that movie's poster, like, burned in my head.
Because that's got the smooth Vince Vaughn head. Or is it the smooth Kevin James head?
No, they're both very smooth. Those are some poor free boys. It's up there, to my mind, with, like, the poster for I Love You, Man, as, like, one of those posters where you're just like, oh, we don't really do these anymore, do we? That's just pictures of some guys. Remember the Apatow era where, like, posters for movies were just, like, headshots?
Yeah, that was such a distinct time that makes me, like, really happy and nostalgic.
In, like, 2011, I would go on, like, that era, like, 2008 to 2011, I would go on dates basically exclusively to the movies, basically exclusively seeing all these awful studio comedies. So I'm, like, a little upset I've never seen The Dilemma. Yeah, as someone who's seen The Bad Teacher in theaters, Hall Pass in theaters.
Hall Pass, that's a great one.
Yeah, it's a classic film. What was the Ricky Gervais movie with Matthew McConaughey?
Extremely loud, like, and incredibly
he's like
close.
He's like a dentist. Ghost Town. Matthew McConaughey is not in it. I don't know why I thought that. But I saw Ghost Town in theaters, a classic film.
Ricky Gervais, what's the, like, plot of Ghost Town?
It stars English comedian Ricky Gervais in his first feature film role as a dentist who can see and talk with ghosts. With Tia Leone as a young widow and Greg Kinnear as her recently deceased husband.
You might... hold on. I don't want to take up a lot of time. Becky's got a heart out. I don't want to take up a whole lot of time on the episode about this, but it's actually a thing that is pretty wild about Ricky Gervais is, did you know that he doesn't believe in God? Did you know?
Huh?
This is so fucked up.
Does he want kids?
If you tell him to not say curses and to believe in God, he's gonna light up a cigar and say, fuck you.
He does believe in gender, though, so, like, you gotta believe in something.
I would bet that Ricky Gervais loved The Da Vinci Code. He was a Da Vinci Code head, like, the book when it came out. I bet he was, like, a fan.
Oh,
he was passing it along
to
people. You're
right, he totally was.
He should have played Robert Langdon.
Oh, and then what's your pronouns then? G/sus?
Fuck my life.
I do think, though, that if you were to give like if you were to be hosting some kind of event with like a lot of famous people and like you got Ricky Gervais to host it, he'd probably like would probably like tone his comedy down a lot, right? Like he wouldn't like take shots at the celebs, right? Like if you were to host something like
don't
that.
Don't even talk about that. Don't even make me think about that. What if he said something about identifying as a thing that is not conventionally understood to be a gender identity at the stars? What if he was mean to the Grinch?
Remember when the Grinch won a Golden Globe?
I'm sorry, the who? Wait a second. You said this guy's name is the Grinch. Fascinating.
I don't even get it, but I love it so much.
This may be the least we've talked about the movie.
I'm just, what is there to talk about? I have notes that I can go through from the book. Stuff they cut out of the movie. They didn't put in where the nurse rips a catheter out of Robert Langdon. it was like two lines and extremely unnecessary, but that was in there.
And incredibly close.
Pull it out of me. It's got a code on it.
At one point, one of the clues is a Damien Hirst painting. I don't believe that happens in the movie, does it?
What the fuck? No. That's so fucking funny.
The Banksy decoder.
There's just, I wrote so many bad lines, and I don't even want to talk about them. Yeah. I save lives, not souls.
I love when Elizabeth is like, Robert, you haven't changed one bit.
Classic Robert.
You talk too much. But then again, not at all. And I was like, what the fuck?
They love each other so much.
I'm like, I don't know this woman.
I hope they kiss.
She knows all about that personality of his. That one that he's got. Like those traits he has.
I have a question though. But don't you think that this franchise... accurately represents if a scholar needed to save Italy three times? Like, don't you kind of feel like it would be a little boring and like he would run a little funny and like he would kill all the popes? Like, don't you like that's not what he's good at, you know? Like, I feel like maybe they did a good job accurately representing academia meets thriller.
the villains know his one weakness, and so they keep sprinkling his hottest students in between him and the MacGuffin. They know that,
God, please stop giving your smartest teachers your hottest students.
We have to save the world from the Anos Domini virus or whatever. They know that they've got an academic hot on the case, so they keep the path between him and the MacGuffin, they keep sprinkling with people from the New York Times who are like, hey, can we pay you to have some opinions about, like, how Little Caesars is going out of business because of millennials or something? I don't know. How would they foil an academic who was trying to save the world from videos of Ben Foster?
You find an icy brunette and you put her right in front of him and you kiss her on the forehead.
They're all icy
brunettes.
I think it's odd.
I think it's odd that they keep thinking that like the way to like do a crime is to do a scavenger hunt. That, like, you've got to leave a series of clues around. Has there ever been a serious scavenger hunt? He's had three of them.
What if Ben Foster dumped the virus in the water?
Like, just dump it, dude. You could have done it before you jumped off the building.
But first, you must solve these three riddles.
Yeah.
Hieronymus Bosch in 16... whatever.
I'm just so glad no one on Earth is an expert in Dante. They'll never figure this out.
As long as they don't find a expert in symbology, as long as they don't find someone who gets paid exorbitant amounts of money to know all the meanings of a pentagram.
He's my favorite symbologist.
Easily in your top five favorite symbologists.
Yeah. Maybe my absolute fave.
Hey, Connor, who's your top fictional symbologist?
I know there's gotta be more. I'm gonna Google movies about symbologists.
Maybe like Evie from The Mummy would be close, so she's actually my favorite. I gotta take it back.
Well, when you search movies about symbologists, it pulls up three films and they're all the Robert Langdon movies.
Yeah.
Oh, National Treasure, Nick Cage. I'd call him a symbologist.
That's fair. Yeah, I would definitely put him over Langdon.
Yeah, I just want to shout out Vicken 1976, a Reddit user, for that answer.
Thank you, Vicken.
Took it directly from him. Big shout out, Vicken.
All that being said, this is my favorite. I loved it. I fell asleep once. And I watched one half one night, and I finished it the next night. And, you know, if you parse out your Robert Langdon films, they are almost enjoyable.
Yeah, this is fine. I think the series basically clawed its way up from out of five, like 2 stars to 2.5 to 3. Mm. And now they're sitting on the peak of 3 out of 5 stars, and they're just like celebrating. They're popping champagne at each other. They're getting all wet from the champagne. Robert Langdon and his
and his students.
3 for me is like 2.5 is like the most I like something I overall dislike, and 3 stars is the least I like something that is okay to me. So
fair.
At the worst of being okay.
Angels and Demons is probably my favorite. This is second. Mm. Da Vinci Code is 3. In descending order, I give them 2.5 stars to 2.45 to 2. I've been trying so hard to have something to say about these movies, and they just go through me like pond water. Like they go straight through me. I think it is so quaint, the things that used to piss off the religious right. I think Ron Howard is a serviceable man who assembles things that are definitely movies. I like looking at Tom Hanks. I resent Hans Zimmer. And
do you feel like you would like these movies more if you actually tried learning Italian history?
I would never fucking do that. Don't even joke about that.
Becky, that's not funny.
Do you know what year they created antimatter? Do you even know that? This is my favorite. Then is the Da Vinci Code, because inexplicably I had fun. And then Angels and Demons I like the least, even though it was very much more interesting than the Da Vinci Code. But I thought it was all blowing up popes, and I need something else. I think that Inferno is the perfect amount of blowing up popes and weird, unbelievable plot line with our hero not really holding it well.
Yeah, I agree with PJ's rankings generally. I would say, yeah, I did not love this one. I like the blowing up the popes of Angels and Demons. I think it's really the only one that's kind of fun. I think I gave it 3 stars maybe on Letterboxd once upon a time. This was the worst of the books that I've read. It was insufferable. And I don't know. Oh, something crazy just went off my headphones. Sorry. Yeah, I just got an ad playing out of nowhere. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Whoa. That was me.
Whoa. That was like a weird ad too. It was like big horns. It's really disarming. Sorry.
You were like, worst book. This,
really. This was the worst book. I don't know if that's just I've gotten older and I realize how insufferable Dan Brown is and Robert Langdon is, or if this is the worst book. But Lost Symbols, also really bad. Angels and Demons is a fine book. And Da Vinci Code, bad movie, fun book.
All right.
Do you ever feel like you would like Dan Brown's work more if you were Robert Langdon's niece? Because that's why I like them, because I'm his niece.
Wow.
You got that symbology niece money.
Yeah, I support my uncle. Sorry.
Uncle Rob.
Sorry, I'm not going to apologize for it. We're pro uncle in this pod, so.
These are my uncles, Stretch, Stinky, Fatso, and Robert Langdon. Stretch, Stinky, Fatso, and Symbols.
Uncle Rob always gets me the shittiest fucking birthday presents.
Me the death mask of Dante for Christmas.
I don't want a book about the Vatican.
Sorry, before you get to the reviews, you know what I would like to see Robert Langdon in? A Hellraiser movie.
That would be sick. That would be actually dope.
Let's watch him solve some puzzles.
That would be sick.
I want to see Robert Langdon in a Saw movie.
Ah! Ow! His rib cage getting torn open by a bear trap. Ah!
Lot of opportunity to be sweaty there.
Oh yeah, that is a wet Hanks.
He's looking at where his leg was, and he's like, ah, it's in Istanbul.
One out of ten. Silly, dull, stupid, and boring movie.
Down.
This movie is so confusing, and the storyline is not rules. Cliched storyline. The final scene is so cheap. Inferno is the worst movie I ever watched. So boring. The lines are so confusing.
So cheap.
Who changed the final? The book final was great, but in the movie changed completely. The worst change I ever seen. 3 stars out of 5. No username. Professor Robert Langdon is a hero.
Yes!
Can't argue with that. That's just a fact.
3 out of 5. The film is basically fine, but quite enjoyable. The thing I love this movie is that a girl seemed to be on the good side is really on the bad side. I realized that not everyone...
Do you like that, though?
I realized that not everyone who seems good is not good. They might be bad people. The director showed it. And so, as for me, it's good to watch.
Someone's first betrayal they've ever seen in a movie.
Or in their life.
So we're running low on time, but I really want to get to this one. So in case we have to abandon ship during or after this one, I want to say thank you so much, Connor, for coming on.
Yes.
Yes. Oh,
thank
my God.
Thank you, Connor.
Thank you about for time. Having me at last.
Our Catholic guest. You know, your Catholicism really didn't come into play as much as I wanted it to. So I feel like next time, regardless of the movie, if you could talk about that more.
I do
really
think
help.
This
yeah,
is
totally.
Better, though, for like representation, because it's like,
yes.
That's not all. All he is, you know,
yeah,
it's not
that's
like the only
so
reason
true.
We're bringing him on.
That's true. I'm also a symbologist.
Fuck you.
Do you, this is coming out next Wednesday. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah, next Friday. Do you live in New York City? Like some of us could. I don't know how private everyone is about locations.
I could live there, but I don't know.
You said she lived in New York? Why don't you fucking dox her? Jesus.
Come out, hang out with Little Amal. She's a 12-foot-tall Syrian refugee puppet who's going to be walking across New York for the next 3 weeks. Next Friday night, Williamsburg, September 23rd, 7:30 p.m. Come out, come join us. We'll have some clowns. We'll have a little Amal. She's trying to find a place to sleep in Williamsburg. It's going to be a blast.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah, you can get your dead horse fan sightings in. If you can print out some headshots of me and Becky, we'll sign them. But you have to supply headshots.
You have to supply our duo headshot from 2015. The one where I was like, can't you get one with Connor?
Wait, do we have a headshot together?
No, I wish.
Is that real?
I'll just MS paint him into one of your older ones.
Please, please.
Is it okay if I go ahead and announce the next podcast series? You all are covering Ooh. All the Oz movies, I believe.
Don't confirm yet. Oh, God damn it.
Every Oz-related movie, spin-off, parody. I'm excited for Oz on Mars, personally. But you know.
Hey guys, can we pick a different franchise than the Oz one?
Oh wait, I've got an idea. What if we did? What if we did the God's Not Dead series?
I love that idea, and I hate Connor's idea.
I hate Connor's idea.
The Dead Horse fans are going to let everybody know what they want to see next. Use hashtag my favorite series and write in Oz.
4 stars out of 5, and then they open the review by saying 4.0 out of 6.
Oh,
when some paths we don't see where we are being led to when we don't see it coming. When there are many paths to choose, but we see others choose the only path that no one shall follow when it's a rebirth. When what paths we currently see we take, we heed the messages of biblical catastrophe that others see. When some paths others could see and foretold, we see the path that needs to be foretold. Mm-hmm. When we don't mm-hmm. see that such mm-hmm. paths that we take us not down our own doing, but those who seek the path for fortune, recognition, dominance, and power. When what paths we go into, we see others follow the same path when such paths lead to what we want. When such paths we others go, we see who really plays God in where the intends everyone to go. We should always prevent or delay such comings from ever happening.
Always!
We should always, always delay such comings from ever happening.
That was my fave slam poetry you've ever done.
This review left by Auto Word Predict 754. Never have been being to do from incense before both of them from both of the time that the Grinch do a making a fuck go to bad, doing the make all the decisions go through it interesting figure the Grinch from all the way through both paths. Ever since before both of them into going through of it.
One day I'll figure out your relationship with the Grinch.
With the who? With interesting.
Okay, alright. Bye everybody.
Dead Horse is Dixon, Becky, and PJ. You can find us on Instagram at Dead Horse Podcast. We'd like to thank Max Huffman for our cover art. Go to maxhuffman.com and check out all of his very cool shit. The beginning song is Fructus Gravis by Hans Zimmer and his many uncredited assistants. The ending song is Mona Lisa by the Me First and the Gimme Gibbies. Jesus Christ.
Just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art.